This special podcast is brought to you by One Touch Property Investment, whose Chief Investment Officer, or Investment Director rather, Aaron Kirkfleet, joins us now from London. Aaron, lovely to have you on the program. I've been seeing some of your research recently about investing in rental properties in South Africa versus the UK. But before we get into that, and there's some quite surprising results that you've come to, are you popping out to sunny South Africa soon?
Yes, indeed, Alec. Thanks for having me on. We're going to be out there between the 3rd and the 14th of February, so popping down to Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg.
Is there still a lot of interest when you come here from potential clients?
Yeah, significant interest. I mean, a lot of people over the last 3 years had already invested. There was a bit of rumorphoria last year in sort of May time, but as the power cuts and everything sort of set in, you know, people decided, well, it isn't going to be as rosy as they thought, and they continued to invest elsewhere, certainly in the UK.
Well, let's talk about that rental income, because this is a market that you know very well. People can hear from your accent that you are South African, living in the UK, and you've been there for a long time. But the immediate assumption would be, in a developing country like South Africa, you'd get a far better return on investment if you buy a rental property than you would in the UK. But from the numbers you've done, this is actually not the case.
Yeah, sure, and that's great. I mean, look, just to be put things out there, I mean, I had to look at, have some sort of rationale or some sort of basis to compare the properties. And it's not to say that you could go and invest in a suburb that you're very comfortable with, you know, outside of Johannesburg and maybe get higher yields. But that's similar sort of scenario over here where you could go and invest in Halifax or one of the smaller cities and maybe get even a higher yield. But if I looked at it comparing areas like Paulsdorp and Sandton with the suburb of Manchester, which attracts similar young professionals. So it's not the prime city centre, it's just outside where young professionals would rent and purchase their first property. And so that's where I've conducted the research on that segment of the market.
Mm. And the, well, to start off with, pounds are clearly very expensive in a South African term, so you're going to be paying more for the property, mm-hmm. around three times more. But I guess and that's the starting point. But there's certain things that you have to pay for in South Africa that you don't have to pay for in the UK, and vice versa. Just take us through those.
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, I mean, the property prices are more affordable in rand terms in South Africa. So, you know, looking at Paulsdorp, for instance, for a two-bed property, you are obviously going to get more size, you know, bigger size property in South Africa. But you'd be looking at, say, putting down the 35% deposit on a 1.7 million two-bed. So you're looking just under 600,000. And that would generate you 114 grand's worth of income. Now, letting fees are pretty similar. It's 10%. But what you've got is rates and taxes, which the owners pay, whereas in the UK, the tenants actually pay what they call a council tax. And then your levy is known as a service charge. But obviously in South Africa, you've got communal grounds, you know, the security of the estates and so forth. Whereas in the UK, it's just the upkeep of the communal areas, which they call the service charge. So, you know, it's 29,000 in Paulsdorf, where a property in Manchester, for instance, which is almost 5 million, the service charge is only 23,000 rand. So, you know, there's quite a marked difference from that perspective. What they have on the other side is a thing called ground rent, which is essentially in the UK, you don't have the sectional title. What they have is the land owner would retain the ground, which is underneath a block of flats, and then charge a rent, which is to all of the owners, which is a small amount. It's only, you know, 4,200 rand, which in pound terms is quite low. And then obviously from a security perspective, you know, some areas, not only do you have your development, but you have the areas obviously are cordoned off and, you know, you pay for security or private security, for that as well in South Africa, which we don't have yet. Does that sort of make sense so far?
Yeah, it does. It does. It's very clear. The security issue is one that I think most people can can relate to, something that you haven't put into, worked into your calculations, are inverters and generators and things to actually overcome load shedding.
Oh, my goodness.
And that could be a
bit. Yeah, no, I certainly haven't even factored that one in. Definitely not. Mm. But even looking at it on a normal basis here, I mean, what was quite surprising was to see that, you know, in pause of on that £1.7 million two-bed, you'd be getting a net income of just just over 50,000, which is only a net yield of 3%. And if you consider, you know, mortgage costs at, you know, let's say 9%, so if someone got just under prime, you know, it's 128,000. So your actual net cash flow for the year, if, and putting in 35% deposit, is 77,000. So you're contributing to an investment. Whereas, you know, places which South Africans have traditionally felt comfortable investing in, which is Manchester, one of the suburbs called Blackfriars, it's an M3. You know, for a property, let's call it 5,000, you'd get income, gross income just under 300,000, and then a net income of 235,000, which actually is a 4.7% yield. But the real benefit there is that you can obtain interest-only mortgages as a foreign investor, and that the interest rate is higher than what we have, quite considerable, but it's still only 4.5%. So what you generate there from a net cash flow perspective is actually £157,000.
So let me just get this right. The yield on the property, forgetting about capital gains, and we'll talk about that in a moment, in South Africa, you'd be happy to get 3%. In the UK, you're talking in Manchester anyway, in that suburb, about nearly 5%. But more important than that is that you have a positive cash flow. And I suppose this is quite key for South African investors. They don't have the position to keep funding a investment into property in the UK, whereas in South Africa you probably would have a negative cash flow. You'd have to keep investing just to retain the ownership of that property. Am I making sense now, Aaron?
Yeah, definitely. That's spot on. It's exactly how it works. And, you know, of the 5 buy-to-let properties that I've got, I've taken them all on interest-only mortgages. So, you know, the income is paying for itself, and I'm choosing at my own accord to use that surplus to pay down the debts on the property, which obviously is something still to consider. But for South Africans, it's ideal because, you know, you don't know what the currency is going to go, to what extent the currency is going to fluctuate. So for an investor, let's talk about what they're putting in. In Manchester, on a two-bed property of 5 mil, they need to put in 1.7 plus purchase costs, 1.7 million. And in Birmingham, it's very similar. You know, the prices of two beds there in the area of Digbeth, it's 4.8 million, so it's also 1.7. But that is essentially what you're putting in. Obviously, keep a little bit on the side for in case there's a vacancy or, you know, there's some repairs that need to be done. But what you could then benefit from is not only the positive cash flow, which between Birmingham at 127,000 per annum to 150,000 in nearly 160,000 in Manchester. So not only are you generating positive cash flow, but then you then have the benefit of capitalizing on this growth, which in Manchester, for instance, has been an equivalent of 7% over the last 5 years of capital growth per annum. And Birmingham has been on a slightly lower, you know, growth, as an earlier growth stage. But, you know, you're anticipating at least between 3% and 5% growth in Birmingham based on the changes in the transport links and the job creation and so forth.
And just to clarify, we're talking 1.7 million rand, obviously not pounds, because pounds would put it out of the ballpark. But 1.7 million,
right.
That comes within the exchange control allowance.
Yeah, I think the control is 1 million rand each, but I think, you know, as a couple, which it generally is, as a couple investing abroad, they've got that 1 million that they can send out overseas, and certainly it's less than, you know, I think than the major control. You know, so in 1 year, because a lot of them are off plan, and I know that South Africans don't like things that are long-term off plan, so we really focus on ones that are going to be completed within 6 months, that you could, you know, certainly, you know, as a couple, put $1 million each, and you wouldn't even go and need to go through the jumping through the hoops of the exchange controls and the investments allowance.
You mentioned Manchester and Birmingham. Many South Africans who have lived in the UK, either temporarily or while they were younger, or just visiting families and so on, would know London a little better. Are there any similar opportunities in the London commute of towns?
Yeah, certainly. I think that's where the opportunity is, and it's really looking at the fundamentals behind that, which are driving the growth towards the commuter towns. Now, as you've lived in London before, you know that even getting from Wimbledon, where a lot of the South Africans live, to the city of London, you're going to be commuting 45 minutes on a good day. So with a lot of the commuter towns, like Luton and Reading, you can get to London under 35 minutes. So from that perspective, it really is practically achievable. But more than that, if you looked at what mortgage lenders have qualified their typical first-time buyers are purchasing, as a single person, they'd be earning $40,000 a year, which is at its current exchange rate is 1.3 million rand. And as a this is a couple, but as a single would be 750,000. So as a maximum mortgage, which is really what affordability is all about, is that you get 5 times earnings. So the maximum mortgage that you could get would be 6.5 million rand or 3.7 as an individual. But the problem is that London property prices, according to Zoopla, are 12 million rand, which is, you know, £640,000. So it's out of the reach of, you know, the first-time buyers. So what they're going to be targeting is places of affordability where it's easy enough to get to work.
And that would be those commuter towns that you've mentioned, not necessarily Wimbledon, which South Africans do know, little South Africa as it is. But Luton, you said? What was the other commuter town?
Yeah, it's Reading. It's Reading. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the towns are popping up, you know, becoming, you know, people are considering them more. You know, it's really places that are not in the zones of London, which are called like zones 1, 2 to 6. What we're talking about are ones that, because of faster train times and so forth, that are outside of the Greater London circle, but that with the use of the railway, you can actually get to London. And that's what they're considering as commuter towns. So, for instance, Reading is the other one. It's to the west of London in a place called Berkshire. So that's only 27 minutes to London Paddington. And it's already got a lot of tech jobs and companies there. Microsoft head office, the UK is there, Procter & Gamble, global company. But not only is it great to commute, but you've also got access to the South Coast, which is fantastic for summertime. And, go on.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, this all sounds really interesting. It sounds a bit like when you're investing in the stock market, that you've got to go for your stock picks. You've got to be very, very sure exactly where you focus on. But what about Britain after Brexit? Living here in South Africa, we get a very confusing picture. Is it likely to impact the value of property or the capital value of properties and certainly the growth thereof?
Yeah, I think with speaking to most of the South African investors, the concern has really been more on the currency fluctuation, thinking like, if Britain leaves the EU, how much is the rand going to devalue? And what we saw preceding Brexit was that whenever a delay was being caused, then the pound would fall down. But then, you know, when there was any indication whether it was a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit, it was still, you know, the pound would appreciate. So that's really been more of the concern. I think when you look at, like, property prices, what you've got is a local demand rather than an international demand. So the shortage of houses in the UK has been well published, you know, particularly in London. You know, they need to be building 250,000 homes and they're only building 150,000. So this is the reason why, you know, there's been such an increase in the London prices. And it's not just London. I mean, most of the metropoles, there's a shortage of property. And that's what really drives the growth. So what the people, investors are really more concerned about is the currency fluctuation. I can't comment, you know, if pound is really going to go up or down, but I would say that, you know, the Conservatives, which is, you know, Boris is leading, they've got a 48-seat majority, which is significant, and they won a lot of seats, which were traditional Labour seats over 70 years. So they've got a very clear mandate, get Brexit done, and I think they really are driving towards that.
So you take the uncertainty out of the situation, it's likely that the property market might not boom, but it certainly it will be stable. So this buy-to-rent area that you're talking about, which would be something that would appeal to South Africans in the way you've outlined it all, how popular is it? How much stock is available to do this?
I mean, when I talk about popularity, there's a lot of you know, American investment funds and international REITs, which are investing billions. It's like $3 billion that they've invested into what they call the build-to-rent market. So what they're doing, the likes of Greystar and Legal in general and so forth, is they've set up proprietary funds or REITs where they would take rich family investments and basically invest on a development by development basis. And they would basically build a whole development in Birmingham, which they have done, Legal in general, and LaSalle partnered on that, because they see it as a great rental opportunity because of the supply-demand fundamentals. So if there's smart money coming in, I think, you know, it's certainly worth considering. But they would buy the whole block and then manage it themselves, whereas obviously investors can follow their lead and purchase the property and then have it managed and benefit in the same way, but with a bit of leverage, I guess.
And that's what you do. That's how you help South Africans invest there.
Yeah, that's a one-touch property, you know, and we've been trading for 11 years. We source property investments across various sectors, and then we'd come to South Africa and meet with investors and then help them choose the property which is most closely aligned to their investment objectives. So, you know, in some instances, like the ones I'm just explaining here now, have been more on the build-to-rent basis, where there are residential properties. And they compare well, you know, because there are different outcomes, because you benefit not only from the income, which is, as we've illustrated there, positive cash flow, but also there's a prospective capital growth. Whereas the other properties that we saw, some more commercial properties, which, you know, you instead of buying a whole student block, you could buy a studio within a block and have that fully managed. But that's more tailored towards someone who's either going to pay for their children's studies abroad, or maybe someone looking for retirement income. But it doesn't necessarily fit with, you know, people who are in the prime of their business career and earning a lot of money and don't know what to do with that. And that's more what we're talking about, the build to rent, where people that have enough income, they want to put some of their money in South Africa but not have to worry about contributing towards it. That's where the build-to-rent properties in Manchester and these London commuter towns would fit in perfectly.